The first time I walked on water, I was 16 years old. I'd never done anything so intentional as that before. I mean, it was a bold ask, you know, for guidance in a confusing time. A quiet prayer that was too cool, that I was too cool to do directly, right, in a church or at a bedside. It was in a youth hostel in Mühlhausen, Germany. There was no pool, of course, it wasn't that kind of place. The assignment had been lost to time, as has the poem I wrote, but it was there then. I wrote a sonnet, right? And I hadn't ever written poetry, but I wrote this sonnet, and it wasn't terrible. For me, it was the math of counting syllables and the ABBA rhyme scheme which drew me into it, but it was the iambs which made it fun, right? The rocking sound of cadence, up, down, up. In that moment on the other side of the world, I was called out of the boat and leapt. His story in Matthew comes after those parables in chapter 13, which explored the challenge of discipleship. Right? And it's in the midst of this moment that Jesus hears about the killing of John the Baptist. And Jesus is overcome and tries to go away to pray by himself, and the crowds won't let him. He spends the whole day healing, curing the sick, restoring them. He needs space and they need him. Then, rather than sending them away, Jesus has the disciples feed the crowds with 5 loaves and 2 fish. And after that, he sends the disciples away across the lake. It's time, long past time, for Jesus to be alone. Of course, that doesn't last long. The disciples are, of course, in a storm, and the waves are rocking the boat, and they've been here before. The same thing happened before, the waves scaring them so much that they think they're going to die. And that time, Jesus was sleeping back in the back of the boat. And so they wake him up, and they're angry with him, waiting, wanting him to do something, like something you can do, but not really thinking he can actually solve this problem for them, right? They just want him to do something. And when Jesus calms the storm, they are terrified at Jesus because they don't know who he really is. So they've had that experience in the boat, but this time Jesus isn't here to protect them. He isn't hanging out in the back sleeping, and they're heading into the wind, and it looks bleak. But there he shows up again, this time downwind, but making the distance. And again, Jesus terrifies the disciples. They think he's a ghost, I guess because people don't walk on water. This is no accident, right? Jesus terrifies the disciples, not because Jesus is scary, but because he is not what they expect. It really can't be overstated that Peter walks on water in the story. He does. After Jesus tells them not to be afraid and calms them all down, Peter wants to make sure that it's him, right? That this really is Jesus, to show his faith or express the belief. I don't know. But he says this strange thing. He suggests Jesus invite him to come to him. Just say a word and I'll come to you, Jesus. So he does. And then Peter gets out of the boat and proceeds to walk on the water. And if you're paying any attention to the logistics in the story, Peter doesn't sink like a stone, right? He doesn't just walk out of the boat and fall down. He doesn't walk on water and fall down. Right? He doesn't go running off a cliff like Wile E. Coyote, right? Look down. right, and fall down to the ground. He walks on the water, senses the wind, and then starts to sink. Notice that it isn't physics or reason or being rational, you know, with our good modernist minds, which prevent Peter from this miraculous thing. It's his fear of the wind. So it isn't Wile E. Coyote at all, right? It's more like Harry Potter, right? When he and his friends confront their fear, or when he who must not be named is mentioned, it's the ominous, the storm, the thing which threatens them. And before that, Peter loses his strength and conviction. It would be too pat and wrong to say he loses his faith, just his certainty. This is Peter, after all, the one who swings from being totally certain to completely wrong, right? Over and over, mostly afraid of what will happen with Jesus in the end, right? It's a natural extension of the man to be afraid, to let that fear disrupt what he knows about Jesus. So here he is, between the boat and Jesus. He's been walking on water, right? Can you believe it? And then the ominous fear comes back. And he begins to sink. He calls out instinctively, learned by now, to Jesus. Lord, he says, save me. And he does. We're too quick to account this to faith. Peter does walk on water, and his fear pulls him out of his connection with Jesus. There was a lot of fear this weekend. Fear from those who have been following the rise of certain white supremacist groups over the last few years. Fear from the students at UVA who were on campus when hundreds of men with torches walked onto a public university chanting Nazi slogans and statements about hurting minorities. And fear from the protesters, police, the people of Charlottesville. A storm had come in, and it was rocking the boat, and in the unspooling hatred and fear, a life was lost in a horrific act of violence. And as many eyewitness accounts have stated, there could have been many more. So why are we so afraid of this storm? The storm which causes our fears to rise like pimples on the skin. The storm of hatred and bigotry, of white supremacy, and its great fear of losing its voice, heritage, and place. Its need to be first when Jesus tells us how we need to be last. The storm rolled into a city which could be our own and came upon a campus which could be our neighbor and demanded we be afraid, for they were laying claim to this land which wasn't theirs. And these hearts which weren't being offered but to accept them as equals, not as our superiors. How often we shrink with this fear. Shrink, sinking into the floor when the storm rolls in, the winds and fierceness. This isn't God coming in a cloud like last week. It's the wrong direction. This is something far more sinister. It doesn't win our hearts with love and mercy. It demands and steals. And we're offered the same words today Jesus offered those frightened followers so long ago. Take heart, it is I. Do not be afraid. that we might stand like the clergy and people of faith who witnessed there. They faced the darkness with its fear of violence, and they kept standing. Of course, I didn't literally walk on water when I was 16. You know that now. But remember that we are his disciples and we do what Jesus does. And Jesus walked on water, and so did Peter. He healed the sick and reconciled the separated, and so did the disciples. And we are given moment after moment to walk on water, right? In the way that I did when I found his voice and found what would bring new joy into my life. The first buds of a whole vocation, which had me walking on water many more times in seminary and parish leadership, in my marriage and with my children. I've heard that voice, and if invited, I would step out of the boat and walk to Jesus. And every time, there was a wind which would distract me. And maybe I sank. It's hard to tell sometimes, because I always ended up back in the boat, arriving on the other side. In the midst of the darkness which surrounds us, the storm with the howling wind, we know that if we face the wind, Jesus is at our back, which means we have the wrong posture with Jesus. We know that if we face the wind, he'll be behind us. We are to follow him. So then when we turn around and our ears point toward him, we can hear his voice. In turning to him, the howl of the wind will never overwhelm him, and we can hear him. Take heart, it is I. Do not be afraid. And when we hear him, do we hear the invitation to be bold and come to him, to step out and walk on the water? Shall we? Just remember, it's the fear that makes you sink.